Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. In the sports world, fans get their insight from their favorite radio show, Calvin and Campbell.
I listen to public radio.
There's Elijah Campbell, an easygoing sports trivia king.
That's a clean burning hell, I tell you what.
And Calvin Smith, the analytics mastermind.
Who ate all the pecan sandies?
This is their show. Calvin and Campbell
on ESPN
102.5 The Game.
That's right. Welcome in to Calvin and Campbell here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And week two of Sportsless, or live Sportsless, I should say, Calvin and Campbell. Calvin, how are you hanging in there without sports? Have you gone crazy yet?
I'm really starting to get there, you know, because I'm still in school, so you can only do so much schoolwork, right?
Because
you can look at this as an opportunity to better yourself, right? That's what I keep trying to do. While I'm in quarantine, yeah. I want to sit down and say, you know what? You can't go out, Calvin. You can't see your friends. When you go to work, there's nobody there to talk to. But that's okay, because you're going to take this opportunity to read, you're going to get smarter, and you're going to come out of this in a much better person than you did before.
That's an optimist way of looking at it.
And then you get a week into that, right? And you realize that, wow, I have no reason to go to bed early. So I'm staying up late. I'm really not as productive as I'd like to be because I'm waking up later in the morning. So really, in terms of all of it, I'm kind of the same guy I was, even though I'm trying. I'm trying, Elijah. And I hope we're all trying to be better out here.
Or at least we're all trying not to lose our minds, which is incredibly nice. I mean, thankfully, I discovered Tiger King this week.
Season 3 of Ozark came out for me a couple nights ago.
That's a big one for you.
If I fall asleep in the middle of the show, it's because I was up until 4 in the morning watching it last night.
Oh my God.
Yes.
You were up until 4 a.m. I don't know if I've ever heard you stay up until 4 a.m.
Yeah, I have. I don't do it very often anymore. I mean, back in my young wild days, back as a freshman in college at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga now, I could.
Oh man.
I mean, 4 in the morning was a regular occurrence, but
Throw down some Red Bulls and stay up way past your bedtime.
Play tons of MLB The Show. Have a little LAN party in our dorm room, me and three other friends.
A land party playing MLB The Show. I like it.
But yeah, I've seen so many people talking about Tiger King too. It's hard. It takes me a while to get into a show. Like, I was two years behind the Ozark curve, all that, you know?
Well, you needed Mindhunter to get back into Ozark. No, but I've discovered Tiger King. And dude, let me tell you, and anyone out here is listening, and if you've watched Tiger King, you know, you can't make any of that stuff up. The saying stranger than fiction actually applies to Tiger King, because you're watching this and you're like, there is no way this is real, right? And then you Google it and this is all 100% real. These are real people.
Is there a book about it too?
There should be.
Okay.
One day.
Usually those kind of documentaries have a book or something with them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is all recent. Like, this all happened here within the last 5 years. And, of course, this documentary was made over, like, a five-year stretch. The guy who made this over 5 years. This is a long project. And it's the weirdest thing you've ever seen in your life. Captain Kurt, have you seen it?
No, but I know it's all over social media.
Yeah. Oh, it's everywhere. Oh, it is absolutely everywhere.
So it's a documentary? Is that what it is?
It is, yeah, about this man who is a zookeeper in Oklahoma, and he is his name is Joe Exotic, the ultimate character.
Super rural area too, right?
Incredibly
middle
rural
of nowhere
area,
kind of zoo.
Oklahoma, it's like this, and he is a zookeeper that only does like exotic animals, and he considers himself, you know, the Tiger King, and he's got an arch nemesis who lives in Florida, who's like an animal rights activist, but she also has her own zoo, and there's like a rumor that she killed her husband and fed him to tigers.
Just casually.
Yeah, and they drop that on you, like, in the middle of it. You need to watch this. This is one of those things that after every episode, you're just like, what the hell did I just watch? And I got to watch the next one. Like, it's one of those. I watched the first three in one night just because you don't believe what you're watching. You're sitting there, you're almost having to, like, rewind it so you hear and see these things again because you don't believe that you heard or saw them the first time.
You know, there... I'm not, we talked about this last week, actually. I'm not really much of a big replay person. I don't really rewatch TV shows. I don't really reread books. I don't really rewatch movies.
I'm very iffy on those.
But when you find something that's really good and intriguing and you rewatch it, it's amazing how you can watch something a second time and realize everything you missed the first time, and then it all just starts to come and make more sense to you the second time you've watched it, if you have to rewatch something.
Which makes me want to rewatch stuff more. I'm like you to a degree. I usually don't like rewatching stuff that I know the outcomes of because it's a little less exciting. Like especially like sporting events. However, this past week, I've watched several old Final Four games and just to see things that I miss. Like a lot of them I watched when I was a kid. I remember like watching before bed one night, 2002 Kansas Maryland Final Four game for the eventual. National champion Maryland team played Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison's Kansas team.
Wow.
Yeah. One of the best white and white combos in the history of college basketball between Heinrich and Collison. Very rare now, but that team was really good. Wayne Simeon was on that team. Wayne Simeon was an awesome player, and I just missed a lot of details of that game. I missed how good Maryland was as a kid. I mean, I was really young. I mean, I was in the second grade, or first grade technically, watching that game.
So I would have been like two.
Yeah, you would have been really young. I was really young watching that game, so I missed a lot of details like Juan Dixon being that good. I mean, I forget how good Juan Dixon was because he didn't do anything in the NBA. But him and Steve Blake were the most fun backcourts to watch in college basketball. And it's just one of those things that you just miss after watching it the first time, especially if you're younger watching it.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're younger, you look back on that and you realize, man, I had absolutely no appreciation because when I look back at those old Braves teams, right? I grew up a really big Braves fan, and those were still in the days where John Smoltz and Tom Glavine were around. And wow, like if I could go back and just appreciate that those two guys, the pitching staffs they had that I really wasn't even alive to see in the 90s, it would really change my perspective on being a young Braves fan, especially once you got into the early 2010s when they had their big change. But also to continue off of last week, how we ended last week's show, the Calvin and Campbell Book Club in full effect. Did you do any of the reading that you wanted to do over the last week?
A little bit. I'm almost done with Loose Balls. I mean, I'm at the very, very end, and I've picked back up on Basketball on Paper. It's one of those things. Yeah. I'm not a big rereader either. But there's been a couple things.
Is that Kirk Goldsberry's book?
Dean Oliver.
Dean Oliver.
Kirk Goldsberry's is Sprawlball. Highly recommend, by the way. Sprawlball is much newer. Sprawlball was within the last 3 or 4 years. And if anyone doesn't know who Kirk Goldsberry is, he is the greatest shot charter on the planet. His Instagram feed is nothing but shot charts and like advanced shot charts. It's not just telling you who shoots where and what they missed. It's incredibly advanced, and he has a book where he elaborates on the evolution of basketball and shot selection in basketball over the course of even just like the last 10 years. And he does an incredible job. It's very visual, a ton of charts in there, a lot of shot charts, a lot of data that he puts in there to be able to explain this type of three-point evolution in basketball. But basketball on paper is almost like the godfather to the Kirk Goldsberrys of the world. Dean Oliver is considered the godfather of basketball analytics, and that was his first book on basketball analytics.
The Bill James of basketball.
Exactly. It's exactly what Dean Oliver is, and he pretty much his Bible is basketball on paper. So I like to go back and read how to reevaluate players using certain metrics.
It's like if you're religious, you do a daily devotional. If you're a basketball fan, you read your daily Dean Oliver.
I read my daily Dean Oliver. And you know what? Here's the crazy thing, too, is that Dean Oliver finally got a coaching gig. He is an assistant coach for the Washington Wizards now. And they are atrocious defensively, but have been really good offensively. Out of nowhere, with Bradley Beal and a bunch of scrubs.
It's kind of surprising that this is Dean Oliver's first coaching job.
Yeah,
roll on a bench
that I know of. Yeah, in the NBA at least. I think this is his first role.
Yeah, yeah.
On the bench in the NBA, and it's a nice little experiment. I know they hired him in the offseason, and I mean it ways to interpret how the season is going. And unfortunately, we don't get to see any live sports right now, so don't we get to see Dean Oliver assisted coaching teams?
I would just love to see any kind of sports, even if it's really, really bad, which we have a lot of really, really bad sports to talk about today.
Yes.
Now that we can actually
get
into what the actual topic of today's show is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we get into that, I just want to say I had a conversation with a buddy of mine a couple weeks ago. We were watching, I think it was Bulls and Trailblazers. I mean, these aren't two pretty bad teams. And no, it was Bulls and Hornets. And
yeah, two bad teams.
We're watching this because we're bored. Man, this is like, this kind of stinks. We're laughing about like watching this game on League Pass. And now he texts me the other day. He goes, I would kill for Bulls and Hornets right now.
Oh,
and I'm the exact same way. I would kill to watch a live game between the Chicago Bulls and Charlotte Hornets, regardless of how terrible both of those teams are. But leading into the conversation, what we're going to be talking about this entire show, and this is going to be our own thing, one thing that sports radio and sports media has done a really good job with in this whole sports hiatus is coming out with different content.
We have no option at this point.
Exactly. We have to get creative. Our station's done a good job of that because on Monday we'll be unveiling on Darren Donick and Chase, produced by your boy, we'll be unveiling a bracket of the 64 best athletes in the Nashville area over the last 30 years.
Okay, current and former.
Yeah, current and former over the past 30 years.
Anybody but Mookie Betts.
See, that's...
Mookie Betts has to be the winner of that. Just off the top of my head.
Off the top, yeah. That's not a bad guess because he is an MVP. It's going to be hard to argue against that.
Number one.
Yeah.
Exactly. Captain Kirk.
Mookie,
you get it.
Mookie's probably going to be number one. And then a lot of other... sports media outlets do, like on ESPN, they've been doing a bracket of the best college basketball players of all time. Everything is about the best teams, the best players, the best coaches. But here on Calvin and Campbell, we're not exactly your normal sports talk radio show.
If you haven't heard our show open, that's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know.
You'll hear it at the top of the hour once we get to 10 a.m. if you haven't heard it.
And if that doesn't tell you, these guys are a little off their rocker. I don't know what will. So what we're going to do, instead of talking about the best teams in the mid-state area or the best teams in the state of Tennessee over the last decade, we're going to unveil our seedings, because we haven't had the bracket yet, but we're going to unveil the seedings of the worst teams in the state of Tennessee over the past decade, whether it be the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, college basketball, college football. We will cover all of that. We and Calvin, we've come up with a list, and over the course of this show and for many shows to come, we will gather a list of 16 of the worst teams in the state of Tennessee in the last decade.
We want to be as respectful as possible to all former coaches, front office executives, and players and all that, because we understand...
Disclaimer. Yeah.
You worked hard, and you know what? If we say something mean, maybe a little bit of a joke here and there that you don't like, it's okay because the athletes and those other people made a lot more money than we have. So They are the real winners.
And even the college athletes, you got a free education. And even though you're worth a whole lot more, I'll throw that out there right now, you're worth a whole lot more than that free education. However, I had to pay for school, so you're the real winner at the end anyway. we are the losers here, but losers like to talk about losers as well.
Bingo.
That's the premise of this show, and that's the premise of this little tournament we're going to be doing. We'll unveil the seedings. We'll start our first round of seed draftings on the other side of this break here on Calvin and Campbell, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, yes. We like to talk about winners in sports talk radio. Coach Mike Singletary from the 49ers one time said, I want winners. But not today. Today, on Calvin and Campbell, we're talking about losers.
Loser!
The losers. That is what we are talking about today. When we are unveiling our seedings, we'll bring out the bracket once we discuss what our seedings are, because we are drafting seedings. Now, the idea that I got from this, personally, was listening to John Hollinger, the inventor of PER, a guy who used to work in the front office of the Memphis Grizzlies, and Nate Duncan do a podcast that I listen to on Apple Podcasts.
What's the name of the podcast?
I totally forgot. It was the first time I ever listened to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was the first time I ever listened to it. And it is, I'll have to pull it up here, but they did theirs on the worst teams in NBA history. And what they did was, or in the NBA history, in the last decade.
Yep.
So they all had a list of teams. They had like their big board of like the worst teams, and they had like notes or whatever. And what they did was they did a draft, like a snake draft. So one person picks one team, and that becomes the one seed. The next person picked the second seed. It is called, here we go. Just the Hollinger and Duncan NBA show.
Oh,
on the,
very easy.
Very easy, yeah. And the Locked On Pod, Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, just their names. Nothing too fancy.
Just like us. Calvin and Campbell. Right
just
here.
Our names, yeah. What's that show with Calvin Smith and Elijah Campbell? Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. It's just our names. It's not that hard. But their idea is what kind of inspired me for us to take this kind of same direction and apply it to Tennessee sports, because we wanted to get – me and Calvin were talking. We wanted to get a list of 16. We want it to be a reasonable tournament. So we're going to expand our horizons not just to Middle Tennessee and Nashville area, but to East and West Tennessee. There's a professional sports team in West Tennessee, the Grizzlies. And East Tennessee, they have the Tennessee Volunteers.
And that is like an hour's worth of segments of content in and of itself.
That's going to be the most fun part of this.
I don't know, because we're doing
which is the worst Tennessee football team.
But we get the Titans in this segment.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that could stretch two segments.
And so our criteria is this. Each team we pick, we can only pick one of each franchise/program. So we can only pick one Titans team in this bracket, one Predators team, one Grizzlies team, one Tennessee football, one Tennessee basketball, so on and so forth. You get the gist. And what we're going to do is we flipped a coin for whoever gets the first pick during the break. Calvin picked tails. It was heads. So your boy wins the inaugural terrible team draft lottery. And with the first overall pick in the ESPN 102.5 The Game, all-time bad team, last decade bad team, Elijah Campbell will select, wait for it, the 2014 Tennessee Titans. And I think we can all, anyone who is a Titans fan doesn't look back on this team fondly.
You should not. At all.
At all. This is indeed one of the worst teams, not just in Titans history. Actually, this might be one of the worst teams in NFL history. As my computer crashes here, I was going to pull
up. Oh, that is a shame. Well, it's a good thing I have it pulled up,
yeah.
Because...
Yeah, go ahead and read off, while I restart here, go ahead and read off some notes here, because I have plenty of notes.
Okay, we'll start with the quarterback position, right? This is a position for the Tennessee Titans that has been in turmoil for a long time. It seems like they have a lot of stability with Ryan Tannehill right now, but we're not here to talk about that. This 2014 Titans team,
when there was none. No stability.
We're talking about Charlie Whitehurst, okay? Not just as your backup, but a guy who played 7 games for you, started 5 of them, completed 57% of his passes. Okay, that's 7 games, Charlie Whitehurst. Number 7, Zach Mettenberger.
Ooh.
Played in 7 games, started 6, went 0-6 in those starts.
Ooh.
Jake Locker was the other quarterback. 7 games, 5 starts, 1-4 record. The team went 2-14, as we mentioned. The quarterback position is the easiest place to start there, just because not only the fact that you're talking about a couple quarterbacks or one bad quarterback, but three
who
basically
atrocious.
Were evenly split in how many games they played. Nobody saw good results, and that is just an encapsulation of what the Titans went through basically after everything with Vince Young.
Yeah. Oh, and 2 of those guys were drafted. They drafted Mettenberger, and they drafted Locker in the first round. What draft pick was Locker? He had to.
He was like
top
the
10,
I think he was the 10th, I want to say. I'll pull it up right in front of me since my computer is working.
Yeah, since you have a functioning one.
He was the 8th overall pick in the 20. I think Blaine Gabbert was the 10th pick in that draft.
I think so.
Locker went 8th overall in the 2011 draft.
Yeah, imagine being a GM being like, man, I really need a quarterback right now. I can either pick Jake Locker from Washington, who had a horrendous senior year, or I can go with Blaine Gabbert.
I was actually about to mention that. The Jake Locker was going to be one of the guys, as I put in quotation marks, the year before, but he chose to come back to school.
Yep.
And, I mean, he probably would have been a top 3 pick had he come out the year before.
Justin Herbert before Justin Herbert was Justin Herbert.
They're both from the West Coast, right? Same guy.
Exactly. Yeah, they're the same dude.
And then
quarterback.
When you go to the running backs on this 2014 Titans team, because there are a couple other Titans teams that deserve some consideration here, but
this one takes the cake.
Probably the most, one of the more well-known draft misses in the Titans, in the recent Titans decade, Bishop Sankey was the guy who led them in rushing attempts and rushing yards.
He was the first running back taken that draft, too, and that was in the second round. And
second
I remember that being so weird back then that it took
Well, that was one of the starts of kind of the running back slipping in the draft further and further thing.
Exactly, and then it's guys like Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley come along, and they just totally changed that trend completely. But Bishop Sankey was supposed to be the best running back in that draft.
Oh, he was supposed to be the lock because of his versatility and everything.
Another Washington guy.
The Titans had a couple Washington
they
guys.
They loved those Washington Huskies fellas.
Who was the third? I love this guy to death. Jevin Snead came up when we were walking
Jevin
through other
Snead.
Teams.
Rest in peace,
okay,
Jevin
so
Snead,
along
man.
The Jevin Snead former Ole Miss quarterback lines.
Oh, it's gonna be
who
good.
Was the Titans' third string running back that year?
Dexter McCluster.
Dexter,
yes.
Dexter McCluster
Dexter
was Jevin Snead. That is like an obscure college football thing there relating Jevin Snead and Dexter McCluster. I'm not even an Ole Miss fan. I don't care one bit about Oxford, Mississippi. But here we are that I, for whatever reason, knew that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, and that was a decent Ole Miss football team.
Oh, they
team
were.
Too. They were pretty good.
It was
good.
A Houston Nutt team.
Houston Nutt, man. Another all namer and guy who was a pretty successful coach in the SEC.
I will say this. The leading receiver on that team? Delanie Walker.
Delanie
63
Walker
catches, 890
wow.
yards.
Was Kendall Wright on the team yet?
Kendall Wright okay. was 57 catches, 715 yards.
Yikes. All right. Wow. The team was in the depth of disparity that year. Here's what I got on this team. Okay. This team, I don't know if you remember, they won their first game of the year. This team was 1-0 at one point, went into Kansas City and won 26-10. They beat the Chiefs that year, 26-10, and I want to say the Chiefs were a playoff team that year. I think they were. And that was when, like,
I mean,
the Chiefs
have been pretty good for a while.
For a while, yeah, and I think that was one of their playoff years. I don't know if that was one that they might have missed. I think they've missed one year. They've missed the playoffs since Andy Reid's been coach. But they beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead, week one of the season, and then proceeded to lose the next 14 of the next 15 games, including their last 10 games. And in those 10 games, they lost by an average of 12.5 points a game.
Oh.
12.5. In comparison to the rest of the league, they were they're 30th in points for at 15.9 points a game. This team is only scoring a little less than 16 points a game with this explosive offense that we have alluded to, starring the three-headed quarterback monster.
Honestly, as I read Delanie Walker's name as the leading receiver, I mean, that guy has seen some stuff in this town.
Yeah. Oh.
Respect to Delanie Walker.
All the respect in the world.
That's what makes it tougher
Delanie
to see
Walker.
Him go if you're a Tennessee Titans fan. It seems like it's just time with him, but wow.
He's really been here through a lot. He has seen some nightmares. I mean, this guy, you can look in his eyes and see into the depths of his soul. He experienced a team like this and then got to experience a team that went to the AFC Championship.
Just remember, last year they were the year after they went 2-14, they were 3-13.
Yeah, they were still. This is the year that got them the Marcus Mariota draft pick.
Yes.
And then the next year was the one they traded their pick.
And then drafted back, got Jack Conklin and a bunch of picks, which led to the year with all the picks with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and Taywan Taylor.
Yeah, enter John Robinson as the GM, and then this team goes completely different direction. Also good to note that this team was coached by Ken Whisenhunt. That seems like forever ago. Or Ken Whisenhunt was coach of the Tennessee Titans, the same guy who took the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl in 2008, took this team to 2-14, led them down the path of destruction into 2-14. They're bad at everything. 29th in points against as well. They're giving up 27 points a game. Dead last in Pro Football Reference's strength of record schedule. So it takes your strength of schedule and the wins you had and the losses and pretty much uses those two as context to give your strength of record and schedule. Well, the Titans were dead last in that by a large margin.
I'm going to stick with it here, and this definitely is the worst Titans team. But the next year that we alluded to when they were 3-13, if you can tell me right now who had the most rushing attempts on that 2015 Titans team is, I will buy you lunch.
The next year?
The next year.
In 2015?
2015. If you can name me any of the top three.
Was Sean Green still on there?
No, he was the year before.
He was the year before. Bishop Sankey couldn't have been, right?
Bishop Sankey was fourth. He had 47 attempts. Fourth. There is one guy above him with 52 rushes.
Jackie Battle.
Nope.
Man.
The leading rusher with 143 rushing attempts, Antonio Andrews.
Oh my God, that's right.
If you are sitting
that's
in your
right.
car and you
Antonio
knew
Andrews.
And you knew Antonio Andrews had the most rushing attempts.
Yeah, props to you. Yeah, round of applause. Yeah,
yes.
You have. Wow.
Clap it up. I am impressed with you if you knew that. And if you didn't, that's Woo! Totally okay.
Because who does know that?
Second on the team was Dexter McCluster.
Do you think Antonio Andrews knows that? Do you think he knows he was the leading rusher on an NFL football team? That is insane.
So we're getting into the Titans' obscurities of 2014 and 2015. And I also wanted to touch on how thankful Titans fans should be for John Robinson, because doing this, I also went back and took a look through the draft classes that they went through, and wow.
Oh, it's atrocious. And on the other side, we'll get to those draft classes. Just to add more context to this team, I have one game that perfectly encapsulates that 2014 season, and then we'll get to Calvin's pick for the number 2 overall seed
yes.
in our awful team bracket. This is Calvin and Campbell here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, we're back, and we are not done talking about the 2014 Tennessee Titans, the number one overall seed.
Number one.
Of our, what do you call this, the anti-bracket. The anti-bracket.
That is
of
appropriate naming.
Of the 2020 Calvin and Campbell Tennessee Sports anti-bracket. The team, the worst of the worst in the state of Tennessee. Celebrating the times that were. Celebrating, looking back on, whatever way you want to look at it. But we are starting off. I did select the Tennessee Titans. And there's one game, Calvin. I'd like to go take a guess if you remember it. The one game that perfectly encapsulates how bad this Tennessee Titans team was.
Just go ahead and tell me.
The Cleveland Browns. Against the Cleveland Browns. Sunday, October 5th, 2014 at 1:02 p.m. Eastern Time, I believe.
Not Central.
Not Central. At what was known as LP Field. In front of a crowd of 69,143.
Very appropriate attendance number.
Very appropriate. Very nice. We had a team, the Cleveland Browns, who are just the Cleveland Browns, and the 2014 Titans. Starting quarterback in this game, Charlie Whitehurst. Titans get up early, an 11-yard pass. No, just kidding. Jake Locker started this game. He did not finish the game.
Ooh.
I should, yeah. Tell me if you've heard that one before. Started the game, did not finish the game. But the very beginning of the game, threw an 11-yard pass to Kendall Wright, 7-0 Titans. Jake Locker scrambles with early in the second quarter, 14:41 left in the second quarter. Jake Locker scrambles, 11-yard rush, touchdown, 14-0 Titans. Billy Cundiff gets the Cleveland Browns on the board, so it's 14-3. Kendall Wright catches another 11-yard pass, this time from Charlie Whitehurst for another touchdown. And Justin Hunter, a 75-yard bomb from Charlie Whitehurst. So it is 28-3 Titans.
28-3. You ever heard that score before?
The safest lead in sports, 28-3.
Don't take that one to Atlanta.
Don't take that one to Atlanta at all. Heaven forbid a Super Bowl.
Don't even take it to Chattanooga. Don't even get on 24.
You know what's funny? This is a 28-3 lead that is about to just get blown in horrendous fashion in a regular season game, but with 2:44 left in the second quarter. Imagine doing this late in the third quarter, having this lead late in the third quarter and blowing it for a Super Bowl, but I digress. So Titans are up 28-3, and then with 12 seconds left, Jim Dre gets a one-yard pass from, would you like to guess that Browns quarterback?
Oh, you said we're in 2014?
2014. Potentially the successor of Tom Brady.
Potentially the successor of Tom Brady?
For this year, at least. Because they signed him back.
For this? Oh, Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer. A one-yard pass to Jim Dre, who, that's right, I don't know either. Jim Dre catches a one-yard touchdown pass. So going into the half, it is 28-10 Titans. Well, Brown's first possession of the second half, 42-yard field goal from Billy Cundiff. Brett Kearns gets a punt blocked by Tank.
Brett Kern also Kern, seen yeah. some stuff
yeah.
with this
Brett
organization.
Kern has seen a lot of stuff with this organization. He was here, too.
Him and Delanie Walker.
Guys now, and I think Jarrell Casey was on this team too.
Yes,
there was a
Jarrell
squad
Casey
of guys that were on this terrible Titans team that got to experience this past year's run, which is what made last year's run really special, especially for those guys
exactly.
right there.
Exactly.
We've hit on that, you know, the entire playoff run. And then Brett Kern gets a punt blocked by Tank Carter.
Tank Carter?
Tank
TCU
Carter.
Great.
TCU
the horn
great.
Rugs.
Tank Carter
he
blocks
won
a
neck
punt.
Roll.
Yeah, dude. a guy named Tank wearing a head roll is the most 80s football thing I have ever heard of. But he went on to play for the Cleveland Browns, block a punt, take that sucker out of bounds. It's a safety, 28-15. Well, with 6:49 left in the fourth quarter, or left in the game, Travis Benjamin catches a 17-yard
pass. Big play Benjamin.
Yeah, big play Benjamin is now 22-28 Titans. And then with 1:09 left, the boogeyman, Travis Benjamin, of course, from the U, catches a pass from Brian Hoyer for another touchdown, this one from 6 yards out. Browns end up winning 29-28. This Titans team blew a 28-3 lead at home to the Cleveland Browns, a Cleveland Browns team that also not very good, but 7-9. So, I mean, this is one of the better Cleveland Browns teams.
That's historic success.
It might have been Mike Pettine's best Cleveland Browns team. Offensive coordinator was Kyle Shanahan for that team, but we digress. But still, the Cleveland Browns, erasing a 25-point deficit in
and
your
the Titans
home
don't score
stadium,
another point in the second half.
Pretty bad. This is, and perfectly encapsulates the Titans, too, because in one half you had Jake Locker playing. Jake Locker gets hurt. Charlie Whitehurst enters the game, and I don't think Zach Mettenberger threw a pass. He did not. So you almost had all three Titans, all three Titans quarterbacks coming in and throwing passes. 21 passes from Charlie Whitehurst, 11 from Jake Locker. That is the most 2014 Titans football game you can ever think of. I looked through every single game log that year, and this one, I was like, this is gold.
That 2014 team led to the draft. That led to the changing of the guard. You bring in Marcus Mariota. And I don't want to come and throw out the term bust or whatever. You can call Marcus Mariota whatever you want. He didn't make it to his second contract with the team.
But some good times.
I don't think that was a bad draft pick. But when I look through the draft classes of how do you get to that point, I'm going to go to the next year first just because the second round pick was Doriel Green Beckham, who I will stay on the table and say, At the time,
that's not a bad pick in the second round.
At that point in my life, I was willing to take the risk. Hindsight is 20/20, maybe 10/10 if you're Larry Fitzgerald.
Nice.
Jeremiah Putasi in the third round.
Who?
The guard, Jeremiah Putasi at pick 66. Angelo Blackson, Justin Fowler, David Cobb, Trey McBride in the seventh round. Two other picks in there.
Oh.
The year before that, you get Taylor Lewan in the first round. That one worked out.
Yeah,
I'd say that panned out. That's a dang good left tackle in the NFL.
That's not John Robinson pick, though, right?
That is not. Okay. We're in Runston Webster territory.
Runston Webster. Yeah, remember that name. Runston Webster.
Bishop Sankey in the second. We talked about Bishop Sankey last segment.
Mm-hmm.
Daquan Jones. Okay. He's still on the team. He's good. Marqueston Huff. Avery Williamson.
Is that a real player?
Yeah, oh yeah. Marqueston Huff.
Sounds like one of those.
Defensive back, played 41 games.
Sounds like one of those fake names on Key and Peele, the Key and Peele East-West Bowl, or it's like a Ibrahim Moises. Marqueston Huff.
Avery Williamson in that draft as well, and Zach Mettenberger in the sixth round. So this actually wasn't a terrible draft.
That wasn't the crappiest draft I've ever heard of.
And then you get to 2013. And this is the one that's so interesting to me.
This is the crown jewel here?
Because one guy made it to 2019 from the 2013 draft. He was the third-round pick. So your third-round pick lasted the longest out of this entire draft class. Your first-round pick was Chance Warmack, who really just didn't pan out. I believe he's making a comeback. You hope Chance Warmack's doing well.
Hopefully, for his sake, I hope so.
He's got a brother who's pretty good. Justin Hunter, who was a very good receiver at Tennessee, didn't pan out in the NFL.
Yeah, that one's an easy one to flop on because he was really good at Tennessee.
He was an athletic freak.
And he was sure-handed at Tennessee. He made some incredible plays catching the ball
at Tennessee. In the NFL.
And then they turned into stone once he got in the NFL. It's
the guy who lasted the longest out of this draft class. In the third round, at pick 70, the Tennessee Titans select, out of the University of Connecticut, Beliti Ray Wilson. He lasted the longest out of this draft class, and that is impressive to me. Good for Beliti Ray. Because this whole draft class, Xavier Gooden, Brian Schwanke, LeVar Edwards, Khalid Wooten, Damian Stafford.
Schwanke.
Not one of those picks panned out.
None. If
usually
Lee Ray Wilson's the guy that's there the longest.
In every other draft, you can at least find somebody who at least played in the NFL. Like in 2012, the first round pick was Kendall Wright. Then you go to Zach Brown.
Kendall, and his band.
Kendall Wright didn't.
Did the band come with the draft, or did you have to draft the band separately?
It was just such a great fit in Nashville. I mean, it just made too much sense.
They drafted him with the name alone.
Cody Sensabaugh. The year before that, Jake Locker, Akeem Ayers, Jarrell Casey, Colin Harper, Jamie Harper, Colin McCarthy, Jamie Harper. All these runs in Webster drafts, and then you go to the John Robinson years. And I'm not here to say that John Robinson is the god of drafting or something like that, but it just got so much better. I mean, Jack Conklin.
Turned it around. He definitely turned it around starting here.
Jack Conklin, who just went and got paid. And then in the second round of the 2016 draft, Kevin Dodd. Followed by Austin Johnson. Talk about a couple misses.
Oh, yeah.
But the redeeming pick of that draft in the second round, El Tractorcito, Derrick Henry.
That's right. It's hard to see the production of Derrick Henry and be like, that guy was a second rounder. The team's passed up
on the Heisman.
Ones. Yeah, won the Heisman easily. There wasn't anyone that was really close to taking that Heisman from him. I guess Christian McCaffrey might have been the closest one, but even then.
And then you go to the third round of that draft, and, well, Mr. Kevin Byard.
Wow.
The highest paid safety in NFL history when he signed his contract.
Third round pick out of our backyard over here.
So you miss on Kevin Dodd and Austin Johnson, but you trade that for the next two picks being Derrick Henry and Kevin Byard? That's fair.
Okay.
There you go.
That's a net positive, I
would
say.
There you go.
That is 100% a net positive.
So for all of that it took to get to the 2016 draft with John Robinson, seems like it was worth it. Trade down.
That's what makes this, looking back on this 2014 Titans team, so much fun, because the Titans are good now. They are competitive.
They're functional.
They are functional. This is an actual franchise, and we're not watching a three-headed monster of Jake Locker, Charlie Whitehurst, and Zach Mettenberger be trotted out there each and every Sunday. Thank God. And when we come back, Calvin will have pick number two.
Near and dear to my heart.
Oh man, this is going to be good. I think I know where Calvin's going, but the second pick in this anti-bracket draft, where we're reseeding all of these bad teams, it'll be Calvin's turn coming up on the other side here on Calvin and Campbell here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pick number two of the Calvin and Campbell anti-bracket. The anti-bracket draft, I guess. Captain Kurt on the ones and twos behind him. Elijah Campbell here with Calvin Smith. First, we have taken for our overall one seed. I should probably put this down in a notepad so I don't forget.
Two good segments on the Titans.
Oh, two good ones. And we can get a couple on this spoiler. On this next pick, I should say, wow, really messed that one up. So, if you're just now tuning in, and within the last 2 seconds, there's Calvin is about to go with his second pick of our anti-draft, or draft for the anti-bracket, I should say, finding different ways to word this. Number one, we had the 2014 Titans, who went 2-14 in 2014.
It's going
to
be tough to beat the number one seed. I mean, they are the clear Vegas favorites going in.
They're the favorites. The 2014 Titans are definitely the favorites right now, but Calvin, you have discovered a really good one, so go ahead and take it away.
This one is near and dear to my heart. Growing up in this city, as a young boy who made good grades when he was little, I lived for Vanderbilt football. I loved the Vanderbilt Commodores growing up. I played baseball, so that makes it even bigger. I was at every Vanderbilt camp in the summers, chilling with Tim Corbin out at the Hawk. But I loved Vanderbilt football, and it just tormented my poor little 10, 11, and 12-year-old self. The 2010 Vanderbilt team. You brought this team up, and I immediately knew who the coach was. It was Robbie Caldwell. I remember a lot of Vanderbilt football.
Dark days. Dark, dark days.
Robbie Caldwell spent 1 year as the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores. They went 2-10 in 2010. I'm going with them as the number two overall seed, really for the simple fact that, and when I say this, please know that I loved this man when he was the quarterback at Vanderbilt. Larry Smith.
Larry Smith.
I would have sold my soul for him when I was 12. I really would have.
And you'd have been the only person on this planet. You, as a 12-year-old, would have died on Larry Smith Island alone.
I loved his dreads. Absolutely.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, he had the most swag of any quarterback in the SEC. You don't have that in the SEC.
He couldn't throw very well. And Elijah, this is where trivia time comes out. His completion percentage that year was,
oh man,
A, below 55, B, below 52%, C, below 50, or D, below 50, or excuse me, 47.
Oh wow, I'm gonna have to go below 47. This is gonna be.
It was 47%.
Oh, so it was right at
47. It was right there.
Oh,
I mean, but push. This man completed 47% of his passes for 5 yards an attempt.
Oh, my God. At least, okay, Josh Allen was in the 47% range when he was at Wyoming, but he was at least throwing the ball 30 yards downfield almost every time he dropped back to pass.
The touchdown to interception ratio?
Oh, I bet this is atrocious. In a two-win season?
Six touchdowns to five interceptions.
Did he throw the ball like 10 times a game? Like what?
He attempted 247 attempts.
And just nothing happened. It was just
a bunch
of incompletions.
That's about 20 attempts a game.
And just those a ton of incompletions.
And honestly, I don't.
Hey, credit for only throwing five picks, I guess.
Okay, the leading receiver on this Vanderbilt team, they were 2-10. They beat Ole Miss that year. Ole Miss.
They got an SEC win, which is
they
the crazy
an,
thing
they
about
They got
this
an
team.
SEC win, which is nuts. Jeremiah Masoli was the quarterback of that Ole Miss team. Wow.
Jeremiah Masoli.
Wow.
Was a guy. Okay.
So yeah, on the Larry Smith vein, right? The whole offense clearly had some problems. It was not just a Larry Smith thing. The leading receiver was
naturally.
Brandon Barden. Woof. We don't need to go down that road. John Cole. Jonathan Krause, who actually ended up on some NFL practice squads, good young receiver, and of course, the guy who caught 15 balls for 181 yards, Jordan Matthews.
So there's some talent on this team.
And where the real talent lies, and this, when I say I would have sold my soul for Larry Smith, it doesn't even come close to the man's name that I'm about to mention. This is so personal to me, I hope you understand.
This is, we're about to hit peak Calvin Smith here.
Zach Stacy was the backup running back. 66 carries, the third string, because Kennard Reeves, who I don't remember at all.
Same here. I don't recall.
So Zach Stacy as the third string, Kennard Reeves as the second string. Zach Stacy obviously becomes a great player for the black and gold, and for a hot minute, a good player in the NFL.
For at least 5 minutes, he was really good in the NFL for the St. Louis Rams, for all you young ones out there.
But the former 2009 Southeastern Conference Freshman Player of the Year by the Associated Press and the SEC head coaches, the man who led the 2010 Vanderbilt Commodores in rushing attempts, Warren Norman. I loved Warren Norman so much when I was 12 years old. You don't understand how badly I wanted him in the two-tone blue, how upset
Warren
it makes
Norman.
Me to this day
Warren
for the
Norman.
Knee injuries that he had, because he was dynamic.
Oh,
so Warren
man.
Norman, 77 carries, 459 yards for this just terrible, awful Vanderbilt football team, head coached by Robbie Caldwell, who eventually became the, or actually maybe not even eventually, was the offensive line coach at Clemson and is to this day. That's a very good unit.
He's got a
They're
ring.
Pretty good. Good for Robbie Caldwell. He's the real winner here.
Yeah, he left the winner. Robbie Caldwell ended up getting a ring, which none of these guys would ever get close to, the team that he coached. Oh, Warren Norman.
Okay, so this is how good this man was, okay? 2009, right? We said SEC Freshman of the Year by the AP and the SEC head coaches. Clearly this
High
guy
praise.
Clearly this guy was wicked fast and dynamic and
High
versatile.
Praise.
145 rushing attempts his freshman year, 783 yards, 5.5 yards a carry at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
We all know those offensive lines are not very good at Vanderbilt. They have
they
not
really
been.
Really have
The
been,
James
though.
Franklin ones were very good. The Derek Mason ones have their moments for sure. Especially when they're run blocking.
Oh, yeah.
Keyshawn but
Blanken,
in
thank you for that.
2009?
Ew.
Then in 2010, he averaged 6 yards a carry on just 77 carries because, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, he only played 8 games. I believe he got hurt, and he missed all of 2011. This segment, the focus of it is Vanderbilt, the 2010 Vanderbilt team, because they're going to go on the list. Derek Mason's first season as well gets heavy consideration here. But this turned into Warren Norman's segment because I don't want it to be forgotten how good he was.
When was the last time you think Warren Norman's name has been spoken in sports talk radio or in an article? When was the last time you think? When was the last time you personally heard Warren Norman's name?
I'm the only person who's ever talked about
it. You might have been. I don't know. I want to go back like in a time machine and just see if anyone talked about Warren Norman, even in Nashville. Because even when like a player for Vanderbilt is really good, when they're going 2-10, are they really talked about that much in this town?
No.
At all. At all, Warren Norman has been forgotten, and you are here to make sure that no one forgets Warren Norman.
That's your edumacation. When we have no sports going on right now, you can look back to 2009 and what was left of 2010 for Warren Norman, and remember that that guy probably would have gone down as the best, most electric Vanderbilt running back slash gadget kind of player slash
utility guy
slash return specialist ever had he not gotten hurt. And that includes the guy that was to come, Ralph Webb, who was really, really good in his own right. But I also wanted to quickly bring up that 2014 Vanderbilt Commodores team as well, because
the honorable mention, I guess, for your Vanderbilt choosing.
If you don't bring them up, it's kind of a disservice, because that was obviously after James Franklin left, the very emotional thing for every Vanderbilt fan in 2013, where the team goes 9-4 for the second year in a row.
Doesn't happen at Vanderbilt.
Insert Derek Mason, comes from Stanford, a school with high academic pedigree, tons of football success. Jim Harbaugh, David Shaw, Derek Mason is the guy to lead an academically prestigious university in Vanderbilt to the next level, like Stanford. And then they lose to Temple.
That first year.
Temple. The Temple Owls in that very first game. This is a team, by the way, with Ralph Webb as the running back. Patton Robinette, the guy who is famous for how they beat Tennessee in Neyland Stadium.
His shining moment.
I really like Derek Mason as a guy. I don't think he's a terrible coach either. They've had their rough spots. But this Vanderbilt team, considering everything that they had with coming back. Not coming back, because there was some attrition from that team, but I look at the quarterbacks, and we thought it was impressive that the Titans in 2014 had three different quarterbacks. Take a guess how many players threw at least one pass, threw at least 50 passes.
Threw at least 50?
Because there were four.
There were four guys that threw at least 50 passes on this team.
Johnny McCrary led the way.
Jump.
We're up against the break. I'll be quick. Johnny McCrary, Wade Freebeck, Patton Robinette, and Steven Rivers, the younger brother of Phillip.
Oh, I remember Steven Rivers,
this
too.
2014 Vanderbilt team deserves honorable mention because of an amazing quarterback carousel. But I went with 2010 because they were. You know, honestly, looking at the 2014 team, I may have to pick them.
Oh, wow. We'll leave that one to you. We'll give you the break to think about which one you want to stick with. And then on the other side, with my third overall pick, we're going to keep it on the West End. And we'll find out who that team is next. On the other side, Calvin and Campbell, ESPN 102.5 The Game.